Our question is how to minister to the bereaved and terminally ill. Now these two do of course go together, because if a person is terminally ill, eventually there is bereavement. On the other hand, we do feel that there is not only grieving through terminal illness and death, there is grief in divorce, in separation, in many aspects of life. I heard of a very sad grieving 10-year-old boy recently who was taken to live in another country and lost all his friends. So there is grieving in many situations, and we all have these times in our lives, and we all want to help other people in those times in their life too. Grace and I have been asked to open up this discussion because we have both been involved with terminal illnesses, Grace with her own mother and death, and my own husband and death. When a person is given the news of a terminal illness, this can often be far worse than the actual death later on, especially if the person suffers a great deal. The shock and the distress and the trauma of being given a terminal illness verdict is very, very severe. One of the first points I would like to make is try not to avoid that person who has been given that news. This happened in my case, and it made me very bitter until I worked through it and I put myself in that person's shoes and tried to understand their point of view. I went down the street in Eastwood and two ladies I met turned and looked in the other direction. Now they couldn't handle that, and that upset me, but I have learnt that we must understand their point of view too. They cannot possibly understand what you're going through because they have not been through that themselves. They don't really know how to handle it, so they turn from it. Nor would we want them to go through the experience to be able to understand. But there's ways and means, which we'll look into later on with the actual bereavement. People will say, I understand, but they cannot really. But they can weep with you. They can put a hand on your shoulder. They can just love you. That is far better than a lot of preaching, a lot of tearing off of texts and running to a sick room, as I used to do. A lot of quoting scripture, which can be a great help, but so often it's just being identified with the person in their grief and in their shock and distress. Grace would like to bring a point to you, which we found affected both of us, and no doubt affects you folks too, in regard to children and young people, who also very much part of a terminal illness when it hits a household. And we learnt very much from our experiences, and Grace would like to just share with you about young people in particular.
I was 15 when Mum died, and she'd been sick for about 7 years before that, and it was very, very difficult for my Dad to talk to me about my mother's illness. In fact, he talked to me very little. And I feel it's extremely important that the children are brought into the situation where there's a terminally ill person in the household. That child is going to have to go through grief, and that child needs to be talked to and needs to be brought into the situation and shown a great amount of love through all of that time, and a great amount of understanding. And I think just talking to them about the situation helps tremendously. At the time of death, there needs to be a situation where the child is prepared to the funeral. That is something that hits children very, very hard if it hasn't been talked about beforehand. Cynthia and I were discussing how you go back to someone else's house after the funeral for a cup of tea. Well, I didn't understand that, and it was quite foreign to me. Here were people talking and laughing, and my mother had died, and I didn't understand. And one of Cynthia's boys felt exactly the same. And they're the sort of things that maybe we tend to overlook that are really important to children. They need to be talked to about those sorts of things, and also talked to about what the service would involve. And also, I think children need to be taken to the graveside or to the burial service, because that is a final part of the death of the relative, and I feel that that's something that the children should be involved in too. Thank you.
Yes, I think that's very important. You know, we do prepare a great deal for life and for birth. We go to classes and we do exercises and we see films and all the rest of it, but there's very little preparation for death. And when it does hit your family, if it never has, sometimes it can be very traumatic. And it's a severing, which is almost like a slicing in half. And those of you who are widows will also know that that is a true fact, that you literally feel sliced in half. And it's an incredible feeling. And that goes on and on. And I do feel it is so important we're talking more or less now, mainly now, about terminal illnesses, that the preparation time beforehand doesn't necessarily have to be come here Bill and come here Joey and sit down, we're going to talk about Daddy's death. But there are times when those little things can come up when we can prepare a person. And if they are not prepared, then as Grace said, between the death and the funeral, it's so important to explain what's going to happen. I took my 15-year-old son by the hand and led him into a church with 600 people, and he'd never been to a funeral before and he had no idea what took place. And it really taught me a lot, and it's very hard to explain to them beforehand, but I believe it has to be done. From the person's point of view who is the terminally ill patient, I feel that there's so much that we can learn from them. And that verse in Romans came to me, present your bodies a living sacrifice to the Lord. Now, that doesn't say I don't want your body if it's a sick body or an unhealthy body or a tired body or an old body, but for every person, no matter what state of health, their body is to be presented. And the person who is terminally ill needs to know and to be encouraged that even in their illness and in that state they're in, they can and do bring glory to God when they are in His will and abiding in Him. And that can be a great encouragement to the person. And that's very important to boost that person's morale. And also to, when the opportunity arises, to steer their thoughts towards what they are going to enter into. You know, they so often only feel very sad and very upset because they are leaving people behind. They don't always fear death and fear dying, but they don't want to say the goodbyes. That's the hardest part. And I think it's very important for them to know and to be able to enjoy before they go perhaps what they're going to enter into. And to try and spoil them that little bit and to try and turn their thoughts to that. And that really can be a great help to that particular person if they are a believer in the Lord Jesus Christ. We must always be optimistic about terminal illnesses because there is always the possibility that science will bring along a miraculous and wonderful medical cure, and also that God Himself will intervene and heal, as He is well able to do. And so it's very important to be practical and to be able to talk about it if the person so wishes to do, but also to be optimistic and to realise that God can heal, and one day perhaps He will, or provide a medical means of doing that. Before we go on to the aspect of death and grieving in death situations or in other situations, would anybody like to contribute specifically on the feature of terminal illness? Yes,
we recently had contact with a woman whose mother died when she was 4 years old, and she was put outside to play when the mother was dying, and her earliest memory is beating on the door to be let in and scream. And people just said, your mother has gone away. And she spent her childhood swinging on the gate looking for a mother to come back. She was expecting to come back year after year.
Must be truthful.
The child was told, your mother's just gone away for a while, thinking the child would forget. And that's a terrible
thing. Yes. That's just as great as experience. Yes. You heard outside the window, didn't you?
Yes. And I don't think parents realise this, how much children can take in and how much they need to go through the grieving process as well. Unfortunately, my dad wasn't able to tell us, and our sister was 11 and my brother was 7, that Mum was going to die. And I heard, we were out in the back room and my grandmother was speaking to somebody in the kitchen, supposedly whispering, saying their Mum's going to die. And it was amazing to us as children to think that nobody had told us, and to find out that way. And it is extremely important. I mean, I was 15 and I could work through it maybe more differently than my brother and sister. But it is important for children to be told what is happening, rather than having it pushed under the carpet because this sort of situation comes up later in life.
Another case of a girl whose baby brother died when he was just 8 months old or something. She was actually about 11. And because she never saw the parents weep, later in her teenage years she became very rebellious. She said, you didn't even care when my brother died, because they hid the grief from her.
Well, it's very important to express our grief and to give the person time to grieve. Also, it's very important to give the person time to adjust to the shock of the news of a terminal illness. They really need to talk that through and to work through that together, or whoever is involved in that situation, and the family too. That's very important. It's very important to leave them on their own to do that. And if they want to be all together as a group and talk about it, encourage that also. But it's so important when you just want to be alone, to be left alone and to be able to talk it through. But I do agree that little children can, in little comments, and a child can be taken out and shown a dead tree in the winter, and they can be shown the leaves coming again in the spring, and can be shown the blossoms in the summer, and can be shown how it dies off again. And in the same way, life is given and life is taken, and we will live again because life comes again to that tree. And that's a beautiful illustration. I have what I call resurrection tree in my own garden, which was a wonderful help to me in that illustration.
Can I say that as a child, when I was 10, my father told me that he had a terminal illness, and he didn't prepare me in a way to say how sad it was. He really lifted my spirit and showed me that he was going back to God. And I didn't know it then. I mean, I was not a born-again believer, but I didn't realise that he was. And it gave me a joy in myself, even that he went. But even to this day, to believe it was to die, as they say, the Lord, I would say, he's sad. He, in laying that foundation of my life, really prepared me. And I would encourage anyone who has an opportunity to really lay down positive ground with their children. The only thing left me with was loneliness. No one explained that to me. I didn't grieve, I was just lonely.
Also, a little child or a younger person or even a teenager doesn't know the meaning of the words terminal or fatal. Because my own son said to me only a month ago, "Mum, I didn't know all the years Dad was ill, he was really going to die." You see, they don't know the meaning of these terms that we use. So it is very important, and it is important too, as Balmain said, to emphasise the positive and to the patient themselves, to give them that encouragement of where they're going to be. "All right, darling. I don't know how I'm going to live without you, but just switch your thoughts to what it's going to be for you when you get there. You know, somehow the Lord will keep us going, and he has. He's kept us going, he's kept Grace going, he's kept all of us going. We've all had grieving situations, haven't we? All of us, in some way or another. But the Lord has kept us, and we are kept by the power of God. And we may be in situations where we just cannot read our Bible. We can feel bitter towards God, we don't want to open his word, we can cry every time we open the scriptures. And we can't read the scriptures, but the Lord will bring out a phrase, or he'll bring out a little word, or he'll bring out a comment, and that will carry us along. I carried along two words for 10 days once, everlasting consolation, but I couldn't read the scriptures because of our grief. I couldn't sit there and concentrate. So be encouraged, because the Lord knows, and the Lord wept, and the Lord does understand. And sin and death came in with Adam's rebellion against God. And it's something that we have to face in this life. And sooner or later, we do all come up face to face with something that's going to take our loved ones from us. And it really is good to be able to talk about it and to prepare in some small way if we can. And that acceptance comes at all different times to different people. Just because one member of your family may have accepted that death and come to grips with it, another one may not have accepted for many years. Another child might suddenly do as one of mine did, burst out crying 18 months ago, and it was the first time we'd seen him cry. Because all of a sudden it came out. Others will grieve and sorrow in different ways, but all come to it at a different time. And that acceptance has to be from little children as well as adults. And friends too, members of your church, everybody comes to acceptance at a different time. There's a lady in our audience who's done a lot of work in this area, and I'd like to ask if she's got any comments, and that's Betty Hayden in your counselling. Have you got anything to add?
Choking a little bit. Can I just say at the first outset, when you use the word acceptance, it's a very dangerous. Well, not. It's probably we never accept that somebody we love has died, but we do move to a rehabilitated lifestyle, and that's what we move towards. So, you know, don't ever expect somebody to accept, because you just don't move to accepting it.
That's right.
But you certainly do, and everybody has their own time. The other thing that sometimes worries me a little bit within our Christian circle is the fact that we don't allow ourselves to feel the human pain. And I have a tape in my car at the moment. I didn't know the session was going to be on, but I have a tape of Layton Ford being interviewed after his son died from open heart surgery. And he's said it's just not natural that he's not going to marry and we're not going to have grandchildren that were his children. And I know he's with the Lord, but sometimes I just would like him to be with us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the kind of human pain
mm-hmm.
that must be felt. And I very strongly believe that pain must be felt before it can be healed.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we shouldn't try mm-hmm. and deny the pain. The other thing, we're quoting examples of things that happened 15 or 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I think we need to be aware that death is now being talked about mm-hmm. a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
15, 20 years ago, sex wasn't talked about, and death wasn't talked
mm-hmm.
about, and then they talked about sex, and now we're beginning to face the reality of death.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of our forebears made a lot of mistakes, and we're able now mm-hmm. to sort of see the mm-hmm. things that went wrong. So there is help. I think of Dr. Ken Nunn, who's done a lot of work in Newcastle. He's now lecturing at the university. And I just make this reference to children. He said that to a small child, mother going out of the room is mother dying. And that's the separation that a child feels when it cries for its mother. It's really the same emotional thing that we feel when someone we love is gone. And we never really lose that.
Yes.
And a child, he also said about a child that they have no concept of the permanence of death.
Mm-hmm.
We can certainly tell them that they've gone
mm-hmm.
and help them to work toward
mm-hmm.
that, but
mm-hmm.
communication is
that's
important.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, nowadays, like
mm-hmm.
they encourage children to draw and express it
mm-hmm.
and things like that. So
mm-hmm.
we are moving to certainly healthier,
mm-hmm.
healthier approaches. And one of the other sad things that I think we as individuals have, and I'll finish on this, is the fact that if you have a full-time minister, as a lot of the churches have, then you have a person who's experienced in just coming and sitting with people who are grieving while they just talk about it.
Mm.
We sometimes haven't got that, and
mm.
we need... When I meet with you and you're in crisis, I immediately go into my own crisis. When you're walking down the supermarket and you
mm.
see somebody who's just had a 12-year-old child die,
mm.
you're immediately in your crisis
mm.
because now what do I do?
Mm.
And so you have to bear in mind that, you know, when you enter, when you meet somebody else in a crisis, you have your own crisis.
Mm.
The only one you can deal with is your own crisis.
Mm.
You need to look at the ways of helping, caring, loving, supporting the community.
That's right.
Thanks.
There was just another little aspect too that I felt was very important. In that first, perhaps that first year after person is taken from someone, and I think particularly perhaps widows, because that's how it's affected me. Sometimes strange things happen, and they do tend to do things that are maybe out of context or very impulsive, and I think you really need to be very patient and just loving and just be available. So important too to just show friendship and include people. Don't leave them out, especially after that 10, 11, 12 weeks. That's the hardest time of the lot. You think you've got through it and you haven't really, and the taps just turn on, and that's when you really need. Now, when my husband died, I received almost 1,000 letters and cards, and 7 weeks later I received a letter from a missionary widow in Japan. I had never met her, but my husband had met her and her husband, and it, you know, her letter helped me more than any of those 1,000, and it was the most practical letter. And I'll tell you one little sentence in it. She said, you know, sometimes we widows think we're losing our faith. She said, don't be too hard on yourself. Spoil yourself a bit. Do you know what I did? I said, yippee, thank you, Lord. And I put the letter down, I went out of the house and I went to the beach for the day. And I felt a different person. Now, you really can be too hard on yourself. And you think that you, oh boy, I've got another friend, her husband died with the same disease. She's not a believer, but she went out and spent $700 on an urn to put her husband's ashes in. And when she told me, she just laughed and laughed and laughed. She said, John would have killed himself laughing. But she said, at the time, she went back into Grace Brothers with a docket and got her money back. But at the time, she had to have the biggest and the best, because that's how she felt. And, you know, God understands our motives, and he knows. And he knows when you waste money on something like that, or you go off and you buy an expensive locket to put their photos in and you think, I've spent all that money. The Lord knows. You see, we do tend to say, well, that's just the body and, you know, they're not there, which is true. But it's a very precious piece of land. and it's a very precious body. And if the person wants to be there, just let them be. Just go along with it, and it'll gradually ease off. That's all I can say from my own experience. Other people find it no comfort at all and find it very hard and cannot possibly go near that cemetery. Well, if that's how they feel, that's fine. They will have relief in other ways. But it is far better to let it out than to keep it in, because you can actually get ill in your body if you don't grieve. You can get ill and you can have grieving years and years later and other ways that can come out if a person is not allowed to go through that grieving time. If a person wants to cry, and if you want to shed your tears, shed them. Don't be afraid of them. Just let them go. The Lord wept, and He weeps with us.
If I was reading just recently where some certain countries in the world where they are Christians, and one of them passed away, they never ever say he or she has gone. They say he or she has arrived.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yes, I heard somebody say recently too, I'm sorry you've lost your friend, your husband or whatever. Oh, so I haven't lost him. When you lose something, you don't know where it is. I know where he is. I thought that was a lovely thought too. Only Christ can fill that great empty void. Only Christ. And He is sufficient. And this is a marvellous little line I picked up from somewhere. He alone who has made the blank in your life can fill it, and He will. When all the blanks of earth are filled with His presence, we gain infinitely more than we have ever lost. Isn't that lovely? And I think for a person bereaved, especially some people are bereft of everything. This particularly came into my thoughts thinking about the empty nest syndrome. You know, if a widow loses all her children too, she's on her own, like a single person is on their own. And, you know, there's real grief and there's real change and there's real adjustment. And I really believe the Lord just wants to get us to a position where we are so full of Him and so satisfied with Him and so dependent on Him. And He is sufficient. He is sufficient for that time. Don't know how we're going to sum this up. Goodness me. I'm sorry.
My husband died with emphysema and he was very ill for a long, long time. Mm. But he helped me before he died because he said more than once, "Don't reproach yourself when I'm gone," he said, "because you've done for me more than you ever should have done." But I mean, a lot of people say, "If only I'd have done this, if only I'd have done that." Well, He saved me from that. And I thank the Lord for that.
Yes, no regrets. It's a wonderful thing. And excuse me a moment, when there are times when you're nursing a terminally ill person, when you can be so extremely worn out and so terribly tired that you can almost lose your patience. Now, I would advise if that happens any time, bite your lip and walk out of the room. Don't say what you want to say or don't blow off or whatever, because you will have regrets. Life has to go on. There are times when you have down days and all of us can look back and say we're sorry about that day or we regret that. But it is important to just stay close to the Lord and try not to say anything that's going to hurt. Try to walk away from it, and the Lord will help you in that situation. He really will. Yes, Chrissy, I'm sorry.
Are there any comments on the situation where the bereaved person or the deceased person were not Christians?
Do you mean one a Christian,
one
not?
The other. I mean, we've been talking as if everybody is
a Christian.
Going to heaven.
That's right.
All the ones who've lost them are Christians, possibly. More that way than the other way.
That's right, and as people who conduct funeral services will tell you, it's very hard to conduct a service sometimes for a non-Christian, especially if your church is full of Christian people and there have been Christian relatives, and no doubt all of us have had these situations in our life. I think the actual caring of the person and the practical details would be similar. The spiritual side is a different thing altogether. And I think the person would need to be very much in prayer to the Lord and in communion with Him, that they would be given opportunity to perhaps point that person to the Lord before it was too late. Betty, you would obviously deal with a lot of non-Christian people. If you come across any situation where you've really been up against it regarding non-Christians and counselling them.
Right. You've got to sort of move at their level. And I mean, if people choose to not want to discuss from a Christian point of view, I don't think I'm responsible to to make sure that I make them have a conversion experience. And I guess that's probably the predicament that we tend to feel. We want to see everybody make a real decision. I remember Jean Raggett speaking, I can't remember the verse that she quoted, but she talked about her own experiences, I think with her father's sin, and how this had troubled her. And the Lord took her to her, I think it was a verse in the Psalms, which more or less implied that that was not her problem, that was between him and the one that had gone. I think too there's a verse in Deuteronomy that says, Deuteronomy 29:29 says, the secret things and I know only to the Lord. You know, we can't have cut and dried answers, although that's what we would like. Our responsibility is to be faithful.
That's right.
And I think that's what we're, that's where we have to live it. And we be faithful, and that's between another person.
That's right. There's another verse we read too where it says that his judgments are just and his way is perfect, and we can only leave that loved one there. Because our peace will go if we keep on and on fretting. And
it's the same thing we lose our peace with, the same way as when we get absolutely compulsive about the fact that our living children must become Christians.
That's
If my peace is gone, then it's my fault. That's between me and the Lord.
Well, it says so clearly, doesn't it, that peace will only be if our minds are stayed on him. If our minds are not stayed on the Lord, we do lose our peace. And there were times during my husband's terminal illness when I lost my peace, and there were only times when my mind was not stayed on the Lord. As I look back, very definite times when I was just so out of touch and my peace went. But the Lord gives that peace, and in that situation, if you've had loved ones, I really do believe that you can just believe that verse, that the Lord's judgments are just. And sometimes we'll say, oh, so-and-so's not a Christian, and somebody pulled me up recently with a, how do you know? How do you know? Just because they don't use the same terms that we've used and they didn't come and make this commitment or got saved that we always said, we don't know. The Lord only knows the ones that are his.
Another point of view. I agree with everything that's been said, but I have found that since my husband died last July, and if this happens to me, I'm quite prepared for it to happen. But I know certain people who are waiting for me to collapse in grief, and I'm not saying I can't. What I'm saying is, if a person is very sick for a long time, and you're the one who is watching them suffer, you can do your breathing while that person is suffering. And I really pray that my husband would be taken.
That's what Grace and I were saying at lunchtime. You know, it really is so true that when the person is released from their suffering, as in this case and in our cases too, that they are absent from the body and present with the Lord. In fact, I was so excited, I jumped up in the air. I almost wanted to smash the ceiling open to have a peep. I felt cheated out of it. Oh dear. But that's a wonderful testimony. And the Lord does prepare you ahead. The grieving can be done beforehand and in preparation. Some people who lose a loved one in very sudden circumstances, but circumstances can be different again. There's another point too that came to me, which my friend reminded me of. When you see somebody after they have lost a loved one, don't be too hard on them if you see them smiling and having a good old laugh. Boy, a good laugh can be such a relief and a relief. And I have a friend and she had a lovely smiling face. She's always had a smiling face, and she's smiling after her husband died. And somebody said to her, don't you even miss Bill? You see? So, you know, you can be really feeling it way deep down, away in the... I won't tell you how my son explained it. Way in your gut feeling, he said. And yet the Lord gives you peace, and that can show through, and the joy of knowing where they are. And after all, that's where we're all going to be one day. We've all got to go. The Lord doesn't come. We all have to face it one day, whether it's that younger age or older age or what age. So it's so important to think it through. And is there any aspects that we haven't touched on that's very near to your heart? Maybe in the first part of the session where we said about other things, other griefs. And yes,
I found when my father died, people didn't want to talk about him.
Mm-hmm.
He'd come back for a day to stop us. He had beautiful life. And
that's something that really came home to me. And it ties in with what you said about the funeral too, that afterwards it was as if my mother had never lived. I think people found it very difficult. And it's only been in the years following that people have said things to me about my mum. Mm. And you really appreciate it. And don't be afraid to speak to people about the person who's just died, because they're still very real to that person.
And life goes on, and if you've got somebody ill for a number of years, I'm sure our friend here, she would tell you it wasn't all grim and grey and awful. It was, there were fun times, and you make the most of those times. I mean, we had our dinner around Colin's bed, sitting on his bed for 2 years. We didn't sit at the table only when we had visitors once in a blue moon, and we had great times. You make the most of those times, and there's just so much joy in the sorrow sometimes. It's not an easy topic. We just hope it has been helpful. If any of you wish to chat a bit more, or to put us right on a few things, or to disagree, do come along and have a chat, won't you, afterwards?
I think we'll have Mrs. Colson. And she has 3 minutes to share the things that we found out in our group about the empty nest syndrome.
I think one of the first things we shared, children bring lots of love and lots of fun and lots of fulfilment and lots of stress into the family, but it's natural and part of God's plan that we rear children expecting that one day they will leave. And we thought of the portion in Genesis that tells us, therefore shall a man leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and they shall be one flesh, and similarly of the girl. And somebody suggested that we shouldn't make our children feel torn. There are other reasons. Sometimes children decide to go it on their own, or study, go to the mission field. Various reasons why they decide to leave. Whatever the situation, as parents we should be prepared to let them go with our blessing, and then they'll probably be happy to come home to us again occasionally. We also decided that God doesn't intend any situation in life, no matter what the circumstances, to overwhelm us. And from our sharing we learned that God had the answer to each situation. That there were those who shared different situations. One lady shared that she lost her husband and 3 sons in the 1 year, and yet God, in a wonderful way, provided, was it overseas students to come, and so she gained a new family. That's the kind of God we have. We also thought about the fact that it's an opportunity, after the children leave the nest, to build up our relationship with our husbands, to learn to re-communicate. Sometimes when you're rearing a family, perhaps your husband takes second place. And I was interested to notice that Valerie shared that she's on her second honeymoon, and I think Glenda shared too, that she and her husband, and also Ray. So there you are, they've found the solution to that in building up their relationship with their husband. We should always bring God into the situation. Sometimes it happens that the children leave when there are also physical problems, and it's very important, if you're depressed or fatigued, emotionally distressed, you should go and have medical attention. But sometimes it's subconscious grieving, and the doctor can give you the right advice, but the Lord will, if you ask him, give you the right solution for you, And that was also brought out in the sharing, that the Lord found for me a new area of life. I found that it wasn't the end of life, it was a transition period into another fruitful area of life for me. And there were others in the group who were able to share the same thing. So the answer is that whatever situation in life we meet, that God will be our strength and he will be our guide, and he will lead us into the path that he's chosen for us, that nothing that happens to us should affect our relationship with him.
Have you ever felt you'd like to learn something new in life? One of the things I'd love to learn to do is shorthand. Years and years and years time to come, maybe it'll be one of those things I'll cross off the board. We had our session this afternoon, we went on and on and on, just quite oblivious to the clock and afternoon tea and everything else. And at the end of our session, one of our ladies said to me, "I've got all this down in shorthand." And she'd taken it all down so beautifully. And I said, "Joy, could you come up and do the summing for us?" So that's what Joy Barnett's going to do. Thank you so much, Joy. Grace and I got out of it very easily, didn't we? Me and my big loud now. I really appreciated the session on ministry to the bereaved and the terminally ill this afternoon. And one of the things that first came out was that we can be bereaved not just through death, but through divorce or separation or any loss. Loss of any sort is a time of grieving as we adjust to the change. And often the news of a terminal illness to the family and to the person can be worse than the actual death itself. One thing that was pointed out was not to ignore the people, but to identify with them as they go through this and to weep with them, as the Bible has told us to do, and to love them through it. Grace, one of the ladies that took the session, shared that when she was 15 her mum died of a terminal illness, and how important it is to include the children and to show them a lot of love and understanding. At the time of death, the child needs to be prepared for the funeral. It needs to be talked about beforehand so they know what to expect. And a time of when you go back after the funeral for the cup of tea and they see people laughing and chatting can be a really shock to them, because see, they've just lost their mother or their loved one, and people are happy when they should be sad. And just to explain why we have that time after the funeral to sort of relax afterwards and to get together and think of some of the happy things and not to be all morbid and sad. And also to explain what happens at the funeral service and to allow them to go to the graveside or to the crematorium. And then Cynthia shared that a person who is dying needs to be encouraged that they are privileged to be going through this time and that they can bring glory to God through this time of illness, even though their bodies are wasting away, that they can still present their bodies to God as living sacrifices, we're told in Romans 12:1, and to steer their thoughts to where, when they're a Christian, to where they're going, that they're going to enter into eternal glory with the Lord, and to be optimistic too, because sometimes the Lord heals and sometimes medical science has a breakthrough and the person can be cured. And also the point was raised several times to express our grief in front of children, because sometimes they get the feeling that if we're not crying, we didn't really love that child or that person that died. So we need to not hide our grief from even tiny children. We had a lady there, Betty Hayden, who's a grief counsellor, shared that we don't really accept death, but we have a rehabilitated lifestyle and we must feel the pain of that loss in order for it to be healed, and not to try and cover up our humanness just because we're Christians. We need to express that. She quoted a fellow called Ken Nunn in Newcastle, who said that to a small child, mother going out of the room is mother dying. And children have no concept of the permanence of death, so communication is very important. When you meet someone in a crisis, you immediately enter into that crisis as well, and we need to learn how to relate to people and not to turn our backs on them, because so often we can make people think that we don't care because we appear to be non-caring by our attitude of not saying anything when they want us to talk to them, but to be patient and loving and available. When somebody shared that they'd heard an expression overseas that
They don't refer to somebody as gone, but they have arrived. And we thought that was a lovely expression that when we think of a Christian who's gone to be with the Lord. And also, one lady said, I haven't lost him, because when you lose something, you don't know where it is, but I know where he is. Another lost her husband last July, and she said that she went through the grieving process long before he died, because he had been ill for 20 years. And she prayed that the Lord would actually take him home, because he was a Christian. And so when he died, she felt a real relief and hasn't had to go through a lot of the trauma of grief afterwards that most people do, and that we have to understand that people react to the situation differently, and not to think that they didn't love the person or that they're sort of burying it and eventually it's going to come out, because often the grieving process is almost finished by the time the person actually goes and actually dies. Another lady said that we shouldn't reproach ourselves afterwards, because maybe we didn't do something, if only I'd done that or this, but to remember that we have done our best. And the advice was also given that if, when we're nursing somebody and we're very, very tired, sometimes we want to say something and express anger or frustration, but to ask the Lord quietly to close our mouth and give us the strength, and maybe just leave the room at that stage so we don't say things that we're going to regret later, but not to be loaded down with guilt because we think we could have done more. And then we dealt with people who don't know the Lord, and how we're not to judge, because we never know in those few seconds even before someone dies what transpires in their heart. So we can never say, well, that person wasn't saved, that person didn't go to heaven. But there's a verse in Deuteronomy that says the secret things are known only to the Lord. And so we have to learn to give that person to the Lord and to leave them with him, because we know he is a just and merciful God. And we can sort of share on those lines with someone who has a relative that apparently hasn't made that commitment to the Lord. And for the relatives left behind, quite often it's an opportunity for them to surrender their lives to him. And so often people have come to the Lord through a death in their family. And the last point was that when the people who are terminally ill sort of being looked after, or we speak to them socially in some way, not to turn away, but to treat them as normal, because even though physically they might be going through some bad changes and it's hard to cope with, but to be able to just talk with them normally, because that's how they want to be treated. They don't want to be treated as somebody different.
Our group dealt with the childless woman or the childless couple, or as was announced yesterday, the childless family. We began by saying life really is built around several assumptions. Assumption number one is that people will marry, and assumption number two is that those married people will have children, and assumption number three is that children will bring happiness into that marriage. We looked at those assumptions, and then we looked at the facts, and the facts were different. The facts said that all people do not marry, that all married people do not have children. On the other hand, many unmarried people do have children, and children do not always bring happiness into a marriage. In fact, some parents have ill-treated and even killed their children. And so we discovered that the assumptions were not the same as the facts around us. We discussed the definition for infertility and decided that infertility is the inability to achieve a pregnancy within a stipulated period of time. And we discussed how that period of time can change depending on the situation or the religion or the culture or the age or whatever. For some people, 3 months is a problem. For some people, 3 years is a problem. So it's the period of time that brings the problem. Then we talked about various stages that the infertile couple goes through, particularly the woman. The stage of denying that there is a problem there, then the stage of suspecting there is a problem but hoping it goes away, the stage of seeking help, whether that is medical, emotional or whatever, and we discussed in a little length what that medical help involves. We discussed the unwillingness in people's minds to accept this could be a permanent problem, and we discussed accepting infertility and what that means, to actually come to terms with it.
we went through various stages of expressing anger and doubt, and we've been hearing about grieving in the previous segment, and we discussed grieving too, because the childless couple must go through a period of grieving for the child that will never be born. I don't know whether you've thought about that, but we discussed that in some length, that all the emotional build-up associated with a child that is not ever going to come, and that grieving process must be worked through before a couple can come to the stage of accepting it and giving thanks for it. To come to the point of saying, "Thank you, Lord, for this situation." And we talked about the peace that a couple must come to before they can go on and face their options. And some of the options open to the childless couple are adoption, which we discussed, and one lady in our group could give personal testimony to adoption. We didn't cover in great depth the subject of fostering, although it was mentioned, and we didn't cover in depth other IVF, in vitro fertilisation programs and things like that, but they were mentioned. The other option facing a childless couple, which we discussed, was accepting childlessness as from God and getting on with life. We had some interesting people in our group who had come for various reasons. One lady came because she didn't know which group to go to, and that was as good a reason as any. A subject came up that wasn't in my notes, and that was, what about the childless grandparents that never will be? And it was something that I really hadn't thought about, but it's worth thinking about. For the older couple to, not older, older than me, to come to the point of realising there are not going to be grandchildren to talk about it too clearly. That is a problem. I have some books which I recommended in the group and I'll recommend here. Childless is Not Less, an excellent book on the subject of childlessness. Coping with Infertility, it's an excellent book on the subject. The name probably makes it sound a bit heavier than it is, but it really isn't all that heavy. And instead of talking about the unmarried mother, we're talking about the wedded unmother. Interesting title, isn't it? The Wedded Unmother. There are three excellent books. There are very few books on that subject on the market. Those three I would highly recommend. There is also a tape floating around on the subject of the childless woman. Mr. Fletcher has a copy of it at the moment. The speaker on that tape is Mrs. Ethel Orr, who gave a 40-minute talk on the subject at a house party at Harvey Bay in Queensland a couple of years ago. If you feel that tape could be beneficial to you or to someone you know, I think some arrangements could be made with the Fletchers about that afterwards. Thank you.
Our group was talking about the frustrations and fears of mothers with young children, but we really covered a fairly wide area, from very small, one lady mentioned cot deaths, right through to early teenage years. The first point that we talked about was that often very good Christian parents aren't very careful about what we let our children watch on the TV. I know it was something I hadn't thought of till recently, but we felt that we really have to make a stand today, seeing the type of programs that are coming onto the TV, that we do get up and turn them off if we think they're not appropriate, that even though the children might carry on and complain, that we have a responsibility to be firm and to do that for them. The second thing that was brought up by one of the ladies was that she felt, because of her own experiences, that there was a need for very young mums and dads to have some sort of training within the church on how to bring up their children in the ways of the Lord, which I thought was rather a good idea. So we don't really have any training, do we, on how to bring up our children. We're suddenly lumbered home with this little bundle and not really quite sure what we're doing unless we've got a good mum that's there to give us a hand. But I thought that was a good idea too, and she also felt that it would be nice to have a support group within the church consisting of some of the older ladies that have got grown-up families or that understand a little bit, that perhaps they could support the young mums in the church and help in some way, even if it was just popping in and having coffee and just having a talk about the problems that they were facing. The third point, because we had a nice balance of young mums and mums with families that were grown up, we asked them what they thought about how young children were being brought up today, did they think that it was harder, or were we imagining that there were problems when there weren't really, that it was us? And they agreed that there were problems today that didn't exist when they had young children. Some of these were that there are a lot of pressures on young parents today, pressures in the way of mum going back to work because of different financial needs. Some of these we felt were brought on by ourselves, a need to have things that weren't really necessities. They were luxuries, but because it seems to be the done thing to have them, like dishwashers and second cars and all these sorts of things, more mums were going back to work. Also, that there was a certain amount of stigma in our non-Christian friends. If you didn't go back to work, there was something wrong with you. You were sort of boring and didn't really have anything interesting to talk about, so there were a lot of pressures in that way. And also, they felt mums were more content to stay at home. They had more time with young children, so there weren't this sort of hairy, scary business going on. One lady suggested that to keep the children on the right track, it was a good idea to keep them fairly busy, get them involved in a fair amount of things. But as another lady brought up, this can also create problems, because if you've got three or four children, you can spend every afternoon of the week tearing all over the countryside, delivering this one here and that one there. So you have a situation then when mum's exhausted and she's crabby with the kids, so the kids are at a disadvantage anyway. So we have to be a little bit careful about that. Oh, then the subject of children in church came up. What do we do with children that start to say they don't want to go to church or that they're bored? Two different age groups came up. The little preschooler that really didn't like it, and perhaps we're giving them little books or colouring in or something to do to keep them occupied and to stop them from making a noise. And then on the other hand, the older child, 13 or 14 year old, that was really getting a bit difficult. What do we do? Do we become firm and say no, that, you know, this is what you have to do, you know, we have a responsibility to bring you up the way that we feel we should, or do we give in to them? I think it was generally agreed that with the little preschooler, some people felt it was all right to give them something to do, but others felt that this might be encouraging them to turn off in church and to start a habit where the minute they sat down in the church pew, it was okay to do anything else but don't listen to what was going on. The other thing with the older child that didn't want to go, that once again we do have a responsibility. Some felt it was okay perhaps to be a little bit softer, but I think the majority felt that we should be firm, and while they were still in our care, that they must do as the family is doing, because we have a responsibility to the Lord to bring our children up in the right way. One lady suggested that we could encourage them perhaps to bring a friend. That might help. Another idea for the very young children was perhaps to have a special program within the church where the children could go and still have some sort of interesting activity that's church related, but that they're not sitting in a situation where they're bored. Then we also just talked briefly about witnessing in state schools. We realised there was a difficulty there, that it was very hard for our children today, a lot harder than when we went to school, that they were made fun of. But we really didn't get into that. We ran out of time. We didn't really talk about that in great depth. I think in conclusion we decided that we really do have to be firm and set firm ground rules that are Bible based when bringing up our children, that we shouldn't compromise. I know I was a great compromiser at one time, and the Lord spoke to me about that. We also decide that children do crave discipline. They need to be disciplined. They're confused if they're not disciplined.